This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a really special guest today. She's a New York Times bestselling author. Yes, it's Faye Kellerman, and she's just written a book called The Bone Box. And I love this cover. Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you, David?
I like to talk to myself before I talk to you. This is the creepiest cover.
You have intelligent conversation, don't you know that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we all talk to ourselves, don't we? Is there anybody who doesn't talk to themselves at some point?
That's how you write a book. You talk to yourself. That is exactly what writing a book is. You're sitting there and you're making conversations in your head. Sometimes you talk in your head and you don't say anything. Sometimes you talk out loud, and that's kind of embarrassing if you're in public.
It is. But you know what? It's a little embarrassment compared to other things that could happen, you know, so you live with it. It's funny embarrassment, though.
It is funny embarrassment. I always say, if you start talking to yourself, just give yourself a cell phone and nobody will know the difference.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everywhere you look now, you see kids with their cell phones. It's like become a plague, you know, and they're everywhere. I mean, and it's like they're not even paying attention to what's happening around them anymore.
No, it's an appendage. It really is an appendage. I heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, it could just be one of those fake news things, that there's a lot of kids that are going offline. They're stopping, you know, the Facebook, they're going back to reading, they're going back to, you know, listening to the radio, they're going back to things where they feel there's more direct interaction and person to person. I hope so.
And maybe that includes actually reading books rather than reading them on a Kindle, which I can't do.
I can't do it either. I do not. A book is a very personal thing. You have to hold it. And if you read novels or any kind of book, you like to go back, you like to see, you can go forward a little bit. It's, you know, you can go in any direction you want. And all the pages don't look the same, so it's not as tiring for your eyes.
Exactly. Now, this is the 24th in the series, is that right?
I believe so.
24. Yes. How have you written 24 books in this series? How have you done it? What's the secret?
I don't know. I first of all, it is not hard to get ideas, especially in this day and age. The hard part is how to filter out all this information that is coming at you and figuring out what would make a good story. Series characters presents a little bit of a problem. I believe we've spoken about this before, or if we haven't, I have. You can't really change your series characters and give them, you know, neutral personalities all of a sudden. It just doesn't work that way. They're not going to change that much unless they get a brain tumor or something like
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. What you have to do is you have to put them in unique situations where they've never encountered or never been there before and see how they react. And sometimes they fool you.
What I love about Rena and Peter is they hide things from each other. They're so good at hiding things, and yet and you know that the other person is going to be really annoyed, but But are you and Jonathan a reflection of these two characters too? I mean, are there similarities?
Not John. No, our relationship is very different than the relationship of Peter and Rena. We grew up together. Peter and Rena met when they were more formed adults. But when you write, everything is a reflection of what you know and what you're comfortable with. And yes, you use your imagination, but your imagination has to be grounded in something. So, while Rena isn't me, and Peter isn't me, and bad guys aren't me, they're all come from my brain, so it has to come from something that I deem important and probably have experienced in one permutation or another.
Oh, that's a good answer. This is, I must say, I read this book last night. I couldn't stop reading it. I mean, it really is one of the more enjoyable ones of yours I've ever read.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad it kept you up at night.
I love that. I love the procedural part of this book. I think it's just fascinating to watch. And that Tyler, he never stops eating, does he?
No, he's always eating something. He never stops being obnoxious either. I like doing procedure. And I like whodunits, and I even like when you have an idea of whodunit, but how are you going to prove it? And I also liked, what I liked is how the interrogation scenes go. I thought they were very, I thought Decker in this book was particularly skillful. So I
oh, yeah, and they're and they're fascinating to read.
Oh, thank you.
It sort of reminded me of Tana French's book, her last book, where she has these fantastic interrogation scenes. And that's what it reminded me of, sort of that back-and-forth kind of tension that starts to rise, and you can just see the other person getting really upset. And it's wonderful.
You know, this is something I've never talked about before, so it's a Kellerman first, and it's on your show. The trope of the cop over the last, you know, I've written for maybe 35 years, has really changed. When you used to watch TV or movies, there was always the sensation of a good cop, bad cop, you know, somebody who plays a pawn, who riles him up and then calms him back down. I think that was reflective of the way interrogations used to go, at least a little bit. But now they're much more psychologically acute, much more subtle, and you just kind of, and Decker kind of does this in this, you talk in a very even tone and keep on chipping away and showing one inconsistency after another. And that type of interrogation appeals way more to me than the tough guy, you know, where's the truth? I got, you know, you're lying. How do you explain, you just said this, but then how do you explain that? So it makes it more psychologically interesting.
It seems like Rena is a lot more curious than Decker is. Decker seems more... Am I reading that wrong, or do you think they're both equally as curious?
I think Decker is more... Rena, because she's not in the field, that's a very good question, by the way. Rena, because she's not in the field, has a more divergent... she comes at things a little bit more divergently. I think Decker... While he doesn't get tunnel vision because you have to consider all sorts of possibilities, he's going in a certain direction, and he may vary a little bit to the left, and he may vary a little bit to the right, but Rena makes these sharp turns because she's not in the field itself. She's not stuck in the pathway of the investigatory pathway as he is. So, yeah, I'm sure it does come across as a lot more curious.
Yeah, it's amazing how she is. She always gets involved somehow. There's something that gets her involved, whether it, and then I love when she cooks. She always seems to cook when she's nervous. Are you the same way?
Yes.
Exactly the same.
Cook, I pace, and I garden.
Oh, God. And you must have a beautiful garden.
At times when I'm not nervous, it's not as beautiful as it should be. But when I am nervous, I start pulling out little weeds and everything. You know, we live in Southern California, so get rain, but we don't get frost, and we're always having something growing, which is really nice. You get a slightly winter garden, but it's really green. Anyway, specifically, I put them in a small town so Rena could interact more. He needs her a little bit more. He will get her to do kind of the... scut work that in LAPD he could get assistance to do because the organization is huge. In a small little town, the resources are limited. So if he needs something and somebody's here at a crime scene and somebody is doing something else, he doesn't mind having his wife say, you know, take this down, or can you listen here, or attend this lecture, just to let me know what's going on.
Exactly. Now, this is book number 24, as we talked about, and is this as hard, was this as hard to write as the first one was, or has it gotten easier for you?
They never get easier. Never, ever, ever. But what does get easier is when you're in the pits, which is the muddy middle. The middle part is always the hardest part, because the first part, you're real excited and you know what you're doing, and by the time you get to the end, you know how it's going to conclude. The middle is hard, because there's like a lot of different pathways you can take, and you're not sure which one is going to work, and that's you go back and edit, there's always these little fragments that you thought you were going to lead somewhere with, and it never developed into anything, so you have to cut all of that stuff out. No, it doesn't get easier. You've used a certain amount of plots, you've used a certain amount of words, you've used a certain amount of characters. To keep it novel and fresh, it takes a lot of work, but you don't get as nervous.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't seem like the nervous type anyway.
I am not nervous and not nervous and not nervous. I'm not nervous. And then I go from 0 to 60. I'm panicked. I'm that type of person.
Is Jonathan the same way, or is he more the calm one?
No, I'm calmer than he is. He may debate that. He may debate that. I'm not sure that. We're calm about different things. I worry about my children. He worries about, I don't know what he worries about, everything else. He's a guy. He doesn't worry. He gets frustrated about electronics, and every time anything breaks electronically, which is often because it's a real imperfect system, and that frustrates him. And what frustrates me, I guess, is if I can't get a hold of one of the kids, or trying to do something, and people are not. When people don't respond, or I'm trying to get information and it's not forthcoming because people aren't answering emails and stuff like that, that's the type of thing that frustrates me.
Does he really have all those guitars? I hear it's like 60-some guitars he's got.
Yes, he does. And does he play them all? No. But has he played them all at one point? Yes. He's an excellent musician. So he has a lot of primo guitars, but at least they're not just wall ornaments. He plays them. He loves them. He curates them, so they're in very good hands.
Well, I'd love to see. Are they all in one room?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That would be amazing to see.
He calls it guitar porn.
Well, that's an interesting. That's a whole other subject we could go into. You know what? What you're really good at is characters. Because I read this book and I never feel like the characters aren't real, and that's so important with a book. When you pick up a book,
you want
every character to feel like they're really some person. You don't want it to be cardboard. And we all know that there are some writers who write and you don't feel like you know the characters at all. It's more the plot than it is the characters. But without the characters feeling real, what do you have?
Yeah, exactly. My books start and end with characterization. That the plot is built around the characters. Would I ever write a straight novel? Probably not, because I like to. Even straight novels. I mean, they have a mysterious element about it. You don't know how it's going to start. You don't know how it's going to finish. So there's that kind of thing into it. I put a little bit more of the mystery plots. First of all, I like mysteries. I like mysteries and thrillers. But the plot is never what sustains the book. It's always the characters, and the plot revolves around the characters. It's just the way I write, and it's just of interest to me. This summer, I have a standalone book coming out called The Killing Season. It's about a teenage boy who's searching for the serial killer of his sister's murder. It's really plot-driven, and it's really intense, but the whole book is way more characterization than your average mystery thriller.
Oh, wow. Is the same publisher going to put it out?
William Morrow, yeah. We're going to do it in a different way. I originally had conceived it in three books, And I wanted to do it kind of as an online thing with book following afterwards, but they're doing it the exact way that I wanted them to do it, and I think it's going to be three separate small books, and they will come out within like a month of each other, you know, maybe a month and then another month and another month. So you never lose, or maybe 3 weeks.
Sort of like the Green Mile came out, when little installments.
Right. Well, big installments. One is 300, one is 200. These are manuscripts. They'll be smaller when they're written down. So one is, the first one obviously is the longest. It's 300, then it's 200, and then it's 200. So they'll come out as short novels, and like the Green Mile in an installment, but you never, even throughout this three trilogies, there's always this driving plot. The characters go through a lot of, you know, different things. The coming of age as they're thinking, you have one twist and one turn. But the central theme of it is, you know, he wants to get justice for his sister.
That sounds fascinating. I had no idea that was coming out.
Well, it is, and it's going into production as we speak. It was a long time in coming, because I had to write it in between the Decker novels, and then it was written, and then it was so funny. It was written like 3 or 4 years ago, so now I have to update kind of some of the lingo. But it was one of the most fun novels to write, because I could really do characterization.
The way the publishing has changed, I mean, with e-books and everything, has that changed your career at all, or are you pretty much doing the same kind of thing now that you were before?
Positives and negatives. Positives and negatives. What really changed more than the delivery system is the consolidation of publishing houses. There's not, for the newest young author, there's not a lot of houses that he or she can go to. There was something like 40 or 50 when we started out, and now there's 7 major publishing houses. There's more than 7, but of the majors, there's around 7 or 8.
Wow.
And that's a little discouraging, you know. It would be nicer if they had more. There's this thing of being self-published, which is good. I mean, you can publish your own stuff. You can go to Amazon directly and do that stuff. But the quality really, really suffers. There's a reason why, you know, books that have been deemed literary enough to be published by a major house is a little bit different than you're writing your, you know, your story or whatever.
Yeah, you wonder why, like a novel like The Girl on the Train was so humongous, and then other books which are just as good, nobody seems to read. Why do they focus on that one novel? I guess if you knew that, you'd be a major person.
I'd go into the publishing business. I don't know, and it's the same thing in the movie. Is publishing a little bit, I guess what the question is publishing being a little bit more like the film industry, where they focus on a few, put all the money into that,
right,
and then let the rest languish? I think they do get these phenom books. The phenom books used to be good for us because they put people into bookstores. Now there's not as many bookstores.
Oh, yeah, that's
so sad. People don't browse. And that's a new thing. That's something that's not helpful. Even though people like Amazon says, if you like this book, you should try blah and blah and blah, it's not the same as going into a bookstore, looking in the true crime department, or looking in the mysteries, or in the romance, or whatever you like, general fiction, and picking something up and reading the blurb and looking at the writing style. It's just not the same.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. But the good news is that people that like to browse will always browse.
They do.
They'll find a bookstore. If they really love bookstores, they'll find one somewhere.
They're getting harder and harder. Although I hear in smaller towns there's 150 new independent bookstores opening up. If I ever retire, that's something I'd like to do. I'd like to open a mystery and thriller bookstore. bookstore, a genre bookstore. Very small, sit in there all day and just talk to customers, you know. And
oh, yeah, there's nothing like that. Oh, yeah, and I've done it. And I worked in a bookstore for 6 years, so I know what it's like to meet nice people, and there's nothing like that. I mean, the people you meet at bookstores are different than almost any other people you meet a lot of times, and it's a wonderful thing. I mean, and you make lifetime friends doing that too.
You do, and there's the passion there, and it's common interest. I mean, people who love to read, and if you love to read certain genre books, they're very passionate about their books, and it's a lot of what this, you know, going back to what we were talking before, where the cell phone is basically an appendage of modern day hands. It's not as personal, and it's passionless. People won't get passion out of typing something into a, you know, search box and pulling something up. It's lacking that. But when you talk about books or music or something that is a more breathing entity, you have that passion, and it's just wonderful.
Now, I must say, The Boombox is published by Morrow. I'm curious whether you picked the title before or after you wrote the book.
Actually, this title was picked during.
During?
During. As the plot developed more, I said, oh, this is a good title for this particular book. Sometimes I get the title on the first try. Sometimes it takes me a little bit of work, and this was a little bit of work.
Mm-hmm. Why more so in this book than others?
I don't know. The initial theme is more apparent to me. There's more of a tie-in. You want the title to tie in somewhat, but you don't want it to be too literal either. It's titles are tricky. I mean, sometimes you got it right away, and sometimes it takes a little maneuvering to really get the thought that you want to come across. Because when people are first picking out a book, the only thing they have to go by is the title.
Now, Tyler McAdams, how many books has he been in? I think it's been, I've read a lot of your books, but I don't think I've read one with him in it before, so I must have missed a couple somewhere.
Right. This is his third entry. He came in initially in Murder 101, and then he was in The Theory of Death, and then this is The Boombox, and he'll be in the next book, too, called Dark Matter. I like him. He adds a little bit of youth, a little bit of sarcasm, a little bit of energy into Decker, who is, you know, not as young as he used to be.
He keeps Decker on his toes.
He does. Yeah, some way in more ways than one.
He's sort of an extension of his wife, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Between the two, they gang up on him, which is fair enough. I think, you know, all wives should have a party where they can gang up on their partners with. Don't you think?
Yeah, oh, definitely. But of course, Rena is more sympathetic toward her husband, though. She's the softy with her husband.
She is.
Tyler just lets it loose, you know.
I know, and Decker gives him, he zets him back, you know, he zaps him back a little bit. So it's fun. I guess it gets a little bit more of my humorous edge. I don't know how you'd call it, but yeah, he's there. He's a mainstay. And I enjoy writing him.
Now, Decker is, I mean, this man is driven. I mean, he would go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if you let him.
Absolutely. As I said, if you don't have passion, what if you have? And who wants to read a book where people are haphazard or they let their personal lives interfere with the job they're doing? That is boring. You
yes.
know, grow up. Do something.
Is that is
Stop
it? But is
whining.
The question is that the way the LAPD is?
Or probably not. I mean, this is we had some identity theft. It's fine, but we had some identity theft. And we knew the person. We knew where she lived. We knew what she was doing. We reported it to our police station. They reported it to the state and the police division where she lives, and nothing is getting done. This is not even a story of a whodunit. It's just a why done it or anything. We know everything. Just to get the wheels in motion is taking forever, and I don't think they care one way or another. Maybe they're just so overwhelmed they can't handle it all. But we give it to them on a silver platter. I got credit cards in this person's name. They were sent to me as a primary cardholder. And they're not doing anything. And this person had been arrested for doing the same thing before. So what can you do? So, and the answer is this how the LAPD works? Probably not. But maybe a smaller town like Greenberry can work this way because there's less bureaucracy.
So who works harder, Decker or you, when you're writing? That's the question.
I don't know. Oh my goodness!
That's I don't know where that question came from. It just kind of popped into my head, and I thought I'll just go to ask her.
I work hard through Decker because Decker's working hard, so I have to work hard to keep up with him.
His wheels are always turning. I mean, he's always thinking of something. He's very good at remembering things. He's got a good memory.
Way better than I do.
Not as good as Rena's. Of course, the women's is always better.
Women's memory is great for when their spouses do something wrong. We can remember every single little injustice that our spouse ever did to us, but I can't remember why I went into the kitchen.
That's right. Oh, I know. That's scary sometimes, isn't it? It seems like a small thing, but it really isn't because it's frustrating. It's that frustration that you feel that really gets to you.
Yeah, I'm sitting there in the middle of my kitchen, and I said, I came in for a reason. And then you leave, and then, of course, you remember why you came in the first place. But it is very frustrating.
And thankfully, your kids aren't there to look at you and think, oh my God, she's getting Alzheimer's. There's something wrong with her.
She's going off the deep end, although I probably jumped off the deep end a long time ago, so they have nothing to worry about.
I think it's in the New People magazine, about these two really young kids. I think they're not even 10 years old, and they have Alzheimer's, which I'd never heard of before. I didn't know you could get Alzheimer's that young.
Progeria?
I guess that's what it is. Is progeria? I thought progeria was the aging.
Physical. Yeah, that's physical. Yeah, you can get... I didn't know you can get it that young, too, but I know there are people in their 30s and 40s. The brain is a very, very mysterious organ.
Yeah, it is. It is weird. I mean, when you're living your life, you don't think about it until something goes wrong, and then you think about it all the time. And it's
correct.
And you just go on. You're enjoying your life right now. It's sunny here in Pennsylvania, really sunny and warm, unusually warm for being winter. But it's probably warmer where you are. But
this is a warm week. It's been a cold winter for LA, but it's been a very, very warm week.
Well, what's the best temperature or time of year for you to write? Is there a certain time? I mean, do you sit outside and write, or do you have to sit inside? Do you have to be inside to write?
No, I'm in my office, and it's irrelevant. I can write when it's raining. I can write when it's beautiful and sunny outside. Once I start, I'm pretty darn disciplined. And it's relevant where I write or what the temperature is. I go completely into my head, nothing, my surroundings are less important. If it's very noisy or very cold, I mean, if there's a thing that my body is going to physically react to, of course I don't like that. But if I'm comfortable wherever I am, it could be in my beautiful office here. I've written in basic garages or little closets. When the ideas come, they come.
That's funny. I can't picture you writing in a closet.
No, I was in Israel. This is really funny. I was in Israel. We were in Israel for 2.5 months, and I was in the middle of writing something. And we only had two kids at that time, so I can tell you how long ago. Was it two kids? No, we had three kids at that time. So it can tell you how long ago it was. But I never got over my jet lag because there's like a 12-hour difference. So I used to write very, very late at night in this tiny, tiny little closet. It was literally a closet that was not attached to the villa, the little apartment where we were staying. And in Israel, they have bugs at that time. It's probably not that way anymore, but they had these big, big bugs, cockroaches basically, called zhukim. And there was once a zhuk that was so big, David, he had a face. This zhuk, you could see his eyes, you could see a little us, you could see his little antenna. So I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said, or she, I said, you stay in your corner, I'll stay in my corner, and we'll be just fine. And me and the zhuk wrote all night.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
Yes, I mean, you know, if the ideas are coming, cockroaches aren't going to stop me.
You're very determined lady.
Yeah.
Have you always been like that, or have you gotten more so as you've gotten older?
No, I've mellowed out since I got older. I was really, you know, intense when I was younger. I'm still intense, but I've certainly mellowed out.
Are you going to write for the rest of your life? I mean, it doesn't sound like you ever want to retire.
No, as long as the idea comes, and my great, 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 great fans, I kiss you all out there, still want to read, I probably will not retire. I probably have a little less energy than I did when I was in my 30s, but I have definitely enough energy to write my books. And as long as people want to read them, I'll read them.
Now, do you and Jonathan, do you ever critique each other's books? Do you ever, before they're published, do you ever give little hints? Or does he ever say to you, well, I don't think that should be in the book? Or
no. We did. When we first started out, we used to critique each other's manuscripts all the time, and I always say this, it led to a lot of cold nights, so we don't do that anymore. but now it's like I will read his stuff. I will almost read his stuff like his first draft of his novel. And unless I see something glaring, which I don't think I do, I can't remember the last time I saw something. If it's little things, I don't say anything. Either he'll correct them when he edits, or an editor will pick them out. And if he doesn't pick it out, and an editor doesn't pick it out, then it's probably not a problem in the first place, so I don't mention anything.
Well, the amazing thing is your books are totally different. I mean, his are nothing like yours, because I've read both of yours, and there's no similarities at all. You're very different writers.
We're as different as we are as people, so that totally makes sense. We have different voices. His is much, how do I say this, a little bit more scholarly, I would say, and I'm a little bit more of the people. People who read us both say, Jonathan's writing makes it look very hard, my writing makes it look very simple. And I think that's probably the case.
But Bone Box, and I don't say this very lightly, is a very interesting book. I mean, from beginning
Thank
to
you.
End, it just really, and I wasn't sure because I had gone on Amazon, I saw mixed reviews. I thought, I hope I like this book. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So all those bad reviews on Amazon are wrong. I don't care what anybody says.
Thank you.
I really mean that.
You open it up to people. People are going to give their opinion. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if you can't take it, don't be in this business.
Well, did it hurt you at first when you started out, when you would get it, when people would say bad things about your books? Did that bother you? Or does it?
Oh, yeah. I still don't like it. Everybody would rather be complimented. But I don't read a lot of reviews. I don't want to read a lot of reviews because now it used to be like at least professional organizations would give you a newspaper, a magazine. Now with Amazon, it's just everybody, you know, who has an opinion. Also, people like who tend to review on Amazon are very polarized people. If you like something and it's okay, you usually don't take the time to write a review about it. But if you have definite opinions, you will. So it's kind of a biased sample to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And there are times when you read a bad book and you think, oh, I really want to say something about this. And you hold back. You think, you don't want to hurt somebody. But, you know, and I don't know that I've ever posted a bad review on Amazon. But I love to post good ones because if I love a book, I want everybody to know I loved it.
Yeah, that's great. Exactly. And there's a lot of good books out there. And even if the books are not to your taste, I don't give bad reviews. If I don't like a book, I just don't say anything. Because even though I think it's a real stinker or it's just really not to my taste or I didn't like something, somebody worked hard to get that out. I know what it is to write a book.
Do you really feel like you've ever written a bad book?
No, of course not. I wouldn't let it go if I thought it was a book. I love all my books. Maybe in some of the earlier books, I might have done things a little bit differently, but that doesn't mean the book would have been any better. It just would have meant it's part of my mature self looking back at my younger self. So each book stands on its own, and I'm very proud of what I've done.
So you write, your husband writes, your son Jesse writes, your daughter, is it Aliza or Eliza?
Aliza.
I knew if I said it one way, it would be the other.
Yeah, well, no, you said Aliza first.
Oh, did I? Oh, good.
Your first instinct was right.
I hate with names because you never know. And women are very particular about their names. You don't want to get it wrong, you know.
No, they people are particular about their names. What's really... it's when you get a message, and it's like that old Saturday Night look skit on Pat. You don't know a man or a woman, and you're so is he available? It's a she. Oh, sorry, you know I couldn't tell by the name. But yes, all of my kids are good writers. Some of them don't choose to write fiction, but they all could.
Mm-hmm. And Jesse's still writing? How many books has he written now?
He's working on his own books, but he's also writing with Jonathan. They've got a new book coming out in August called Crime Scene that takes place in Northern California. Great, great, great. It's a medical examiner book or a coroner's book. It's the coroner's office. Great book.
How much research do you have to do for your books? I mean, do you do a lot for every book, or how does that process work with you?
It's a fair amount. You're always writing about something you're not absolutely 100% positive of. So whenever that happens, you have to do some research. But it's not a huge integral part. It's not like James Michener or something like that, where you had to just delve into deep research.
Right. Well, I'm always curious about the research, because that's got to be the hard part. I mean, you have to... Because I know writers, I mean, Jeffrey Deaver says he does like 500 pages of research for every book.
I do not. I've done period novels where I've done a great deal of research. I've done novels that take place in different cities where I've done a great deal of research. Research is fun. That is the greatest part of doing a period of novel, is just the research. That's not hard. It's fun. Because one thing leads you to curiosity. If you're a curious person, one thing leads you to another, and then leads you to another, and then all of a sudden you're getting a lot of ideas just by following a train of loose associations. So I like that. It's especially made easy by the Internet, because all things, either fact or fiction, are available at your fingertips, where before, when I wrote The Quality of Mercy about, you know, the Tudor period, I had to go into the stacks of UCLA Library. Mm. That was harder, because there was a tremendous amount of books, and it was harder to filter. The good news about that is I went into the historical stacks, so I was researching a specific incident, so I with gloved hands, got to look at books from, like, the 16th century or the 18th century, all these really, really interesting things or pamphlets that were written about the incident at the time.
Now, when you finish a book, do you always know when you're done, or do you agonize sometimes and you think, oh, should I change that? Should I change that? Or is it always, are you always sure in your mind when it's actually finished?
sure, but you know, at some point you have to stop. The book ended. You go back and re-edit, and then you re-edit again, but you really do need time in between, or else you're just making the same mistakes over and over. You need a little perspective.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm looking at, you used a word, and I think it was on the last, second to last page. Oh, invidigiously. I know, how do you, I don't even know how you say it. Invidiously. Invidious. I've never heard of that word before. It was like one of the last words of the whole book, and I'm like, I don't know what that word means.
Invidious, it means you compare it in a negative light.
Right, and I thought, where did that word come from? That's a great word. Isn't it funny how you can see words that you've never seen before?
It does happen, and I go, what? My son's writing, when he writes his fiction, he's a Harvard guy, and we always have to, like, he inevitably uses a word that I've never heard of. But it's okay, it increases my vocabulary.
He must be great at Scrabble.
He's fantastic at Scrabble. He is unbelievable. He not only knows Jesse, a tremendous... My daughters are very, very good at Scrabble. All three of them are. All of my kids, they not only know a lot of words, which is important, but they're very good at anagrams. They can see scrabbled letters. I used to do anagrams with them, and you know what you do. You start with a word, and then you steal the word based on what
right.
you have. You add a letter, and they used to go from, like, three words to 12-letter words in a matter of seconds. And it was hard for me to keep up with these guys. I said, after a while, I said, okay, this is a young person's game. Goodbye. But they're very, very good at that.
Right.
You know, modern-day kids, they all learn all that vocabulary.
Right. Will there be anything else that we don't, as of right now, after 24 books, Peter and Rena, is there anything about them that we don't know?
Of course, because there's things about them that I don't know.
Do you even know what those things are yet, or does it come into your mind with each book?
No, they'll tell me when the occasion arises. It's true. They talk to me, and when I need to know something, they will tell me.
The question is, why has there never been a TV series or any movies about these characters? What's been the holdup?
Okay, for a long, 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 long time, I didn't sell. I just didn't sell. Finally, a production company came to me, and they said they wanted to do a movie, a TV series, original streaming series out of it. And I said, okay, you can try. I said, it won't work, because I know the TV people. These are not characters that... It's just not an American cop series. It's slower moving. It's more character driven, as you said. It evolves. So I said, you can do whatever you want with them. I mean, you know, I'll take your option money. I said, but I have no idea why you're doing this. But it has been optioned. And Jonathan's book has been, Jonathan's series, Alex Delaware, for original TV series, has also been optioned. But it takes a while to get. You have to find somebody interested, and you have to get the right perspective on it, and at least these people seem to understand my novels. So we'll see what happens.
I like to think Pete looks like a little like Colin Farrell when he was younger.
Probably, yeah. That's a good call. Good call.
I love him. I mean, there's just something about him that's wonderful, especially when he was
Absolutely.
Younger.
Absolutely. Good call. Rena, I have no idea. I mean, when they were younger, I had other actresses or things in mind, because you write kind of visually. Now, they are so encoded in my brain, and they have such a definite look in my brain that I can't find anybody to kind of pin on them.
I'm trying to think in my brain who would be good for Rena. I'm thinking not Reese Witherspoon. She's a little too bubbly. But
yeah, oh, no.
maybe more like a Charlize Theron or a Scarlett Johansson or something, you know?
Too pretty. I mean, she's beautiful, but I need. It has to be somebody that has an intensity, like you said.
Maybe Emily Blunt.
Period. Yeah, maybe somebody like her who has that curiosity about them. It has to be somebody whose eyes never stop moving for both of them. And I haven't found the right actor or actresses from them. Their brain never stops and their eyes never stop.
You know what you're really good with when you introduce new characters? Tyler's a very interesting character. I remember when Cindy first came around. I love Cindy. I fell in love with Cindy right away. So you're very good at introducing new characters and making them interesting. It's not only the introduction of you, they have to be interesting. They can't just be, they can't just sit there and do nothing or be dull. You don't want a dull character.
No throwaways. No throwaways when you write information, no throwaways when you do descriptions, and no throwaway characters. There has to be a purpose for that to be there. If there's no purpose other than the fact that you like how it came out, you discard it. And as a result, we wind up discarding, writers wind up discarding, I wind up discarding a lot of material that may be well written, but it doesn't belong.
And you know that. After 24 books, I guess you would know that right away if it just didn't work. It would just, it would just like hit you, like, this isn't working, I got to get rid of this.
Yeah, or what happens a lot of is you don't write a book in one sitting. You write it over a period of years in smaller things, and you wind up over-explaining the same thing, and you go, why do I need it here when I just explained it 20 pages ago? So you rip that out. It's always better to overwrite than to underwrite, because it's easier to take out than it is to add in.
So I'm curious about what kind of music you listen to, and what and do you eat while you're writing?
No, I do not eat. I eat every other time, but not when I'm writing. Eating is not my problem, but no, my brain is working too fast. I just don't eat. I drink. I mean, I have a Diet Coke or coffee or something like that, but I don't eat. Music. I love classical music. I listen to classical music a lot. I listen to a lot of instrumental music. I find that words distract me for some reason, because when I listen to music, I'm either drinking coffee in the morning with Jonathan, or I'm doing my jog, and words distract me. Once in a while, I'll listen to current music just to get some energy going, but I listen to weird things. I listen to Renaissance music. I listen to a lot of Bach. I love Bach. And I listen to, like, Celtic music, Enya, Lorena McKinnock, these beautiful voice Irish singers, even though they have words, their voices are so melodic. It's almost like a siren's call. And you go into this hypnosis, and when you do, it creates a lot of ideas.
Wow, that's fascinating. You're a very interesting woman.
Oh, thank you.
No, you really are. I mean, there's a lot of depth to you, which is nice. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of authors, so I can tell by talking to them how interesting they are. You seem you seem open to almost anything, but you seem like you have a lot of different interests, which is nice.
I do. Thank you. I do. I'm open to a lot of things. I'm open to a lot of opinions, even opinions that I don't agree with, because I don't know if I don't agree with them, if I don't hear them. It's just very good to be open-minded about everything. Active listening is a very good thing.
Right. We haven't even discussed the plot of the book. Rena finds a dead body in this one at the beginning of the book.
Body in chapter one, it's about a series of bones that have been resurrected, they dug up a bunch of bodies, identifying them and finding the common feature. It leads to a lot of alleys. Some are blind, and like they said, it reaches to a killer who is hiding in plain sight.
And see, that's the mark of a good book, when I can picture some of the scenes in my head, and I can picture a lot of these scenes, you know, that happened in the book in my head, and that's a beautiful thing. I mean, your imagination, it's like Lisa Scottolini says, with a book, you have, everything's in your mind, whereas a movie, everything's on the screen.
Exactly. That's why the evolution and the revelation in a book is a totally different thing. It has to evolve in a way that lets the reader's brain evolve along with it.
Are you able to read other mysteries? Are you able to read thrillers, or do you stay away because you write that genre?
If it's a good thriller, I will read it, but not when I'm writing, because I don't. It is too confusing. I read a great deal of history and biography. That's my thing. I love history. I love I love a lot of economics and theory books. I'm kind of a nerd that way. All these psychology books, not how to be a better person, but things like the only one that comes to me right now is Thinking Fast and Slow, How the Brain Works, How People Work. There was a time where I went through all the presidents, but anything that has that I really don't know a lot about, I like to read. But I do read fiction, too. I just ordered a book because I read the review in the Wall Street Journal. It was some novel on Dodge City. Normally, I'm not interested in any of the, you know, the old Western characters, but it just sounded interesting. Right off the bat in the review, I learned out that Bat Masterson was Canadian, which I did not know.
Wow.
So I said, okay, let me read it. Let me see what this is all about.
So you have a massive curiosity. I can hear it in your voice.
I'm curious about everything. I mean, we have a big, wide world. If you're not going to be curious, you know, what's the point?
Have you traveled just about everywhere with Jonathan?
Not everywhere. There are still places I want to travel, but since my last daughter flew the coop, she's now 24, so that's 6 years ago, we had a chance to travel a lot, and I still love it. I love it, love it. We just 2 years ago came back from Asia. And that was fabulous. I found it so fascinating. Mm. It's a very foreign place. It's so foreign you can't even read, you know, the signs. And that's what made it so so much fun. Everything was foreign. Everything was new. You kind of had to. We had guides, of course, but they took us to a lot of things. When we do guides, we do them so extensively. We're not leisure travelers. You know, we start and we go because we're very, very curious.
Right. And you don't write on vacation at all?
No. No.
That's great. That's great. Because I would think as a writer, you always have some kind of, something's always going through your head, like, oh, I can put that in my book.
Of course. But you have to stop working once in a while for your brain to refresh, and that's what travel does. And then it refreshes, it hits the reset button, and then you can start to integrate different things. While we're here on the phone, I just wanted to say everybody who is at Left Coast Prime will see you very soon, and we're looking forward to that.
Oh, wow, that's cool. What date is that?
It's in March.
Okay, right about. Well, it's been great. We have to let you go. I know you have an appointment at 2. The book, again, is called Bone Box. It's the 24th Decker Lazarus novel. And it's been a pleasure to have you. I can't tell you, this has been a lot of fun. It really has.
Thank you, David. It's always a joy to talk to you. Always ask the most interesting questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.